Translation: the Almighty Personality of Godhead, Sri Krishna, having observed that great danger befalling his devotees, who were fully surrendered souls, at once took up his Sudarshan disc to protect them. I should maybe say this is the content of this is the last remaining descendant of the Pandavas was lying as an embryo in the womb of Uttara. It was the hope, the future of the dynasty, or of the Pandavas, the family. And now, Ashwatthama, a great warrior, totally enraged by the fact that the Kauravas had lost the war, viciously threw a weapon at the a Brahmastra weapon, similar to the nuclear weapon with which he wanted to annihilate the living Pandavas, the five brothers, and he wanted also to kill everyone related to the Pandavas. He wanted to stamp out the Pandavas. So Krishna, knowing that his great devotees were in great danger, at once took up his Sudarshan Chakra. The Brahmastra, writes Srila Prabhupada, the supreme weapon released by Ashwatthama, was something similar to the nuclear weapon, but with more radiation and heat. This Brahmastra is the product of a more subtle science, being the product of a finer sound, a mantra recorded in the Vedas. Another advantage of this weapon is that it is not blind like the nuclear weapon, because it can be directed only to the target and nothing else. You know, it's an intelligent weapon, in other words. It just finds the one for whom it is released, or the ones. Ashwatthama released the weapon just to finish all the male members of Pandu's families. No, it's not just the... this is a different incident. In the beginning I spoke that Ashwatthama had aimed it at the embryo in Uttara's womb. That is another incident. Here I made a mistake. Here we hear that he was aiming it at all the male members of Pandu's families. Therefore, in one sense, it was more dangerous than the atomic bombs, because it could penetrate even the most protected place and would never, ever miss the target. Knowing all this, Lord Sri Krishna at once took up his personal weapon to protect his devotees, who did not know anyone other than Krishna. In the Bhagavad Gita, the Lord has clearly promised that his devotees are never to be vanquished. And he behaves according to the quality or degree of the devotional service rendered by the devotees. Here the word Ananya Vishayatmanam is significant. The Pandavas were 100% dependent on the protection of the Lord, although they were all great warriors themselves. But the Lord neglects even the greatest warriors and also vanquishes them in no time. When the Lord saw that there was no time for the Pandavas to counteract the Brahmastra of Ashwatthama, he took up his weapon even at the risk of breaking his own vow. Although the battle of Kurukshetra was almost finished, still, according to his vow, he should not have taken up his own weapon. May I just intersect here? Krishna had given at the beginning of the battle this vow. He had said, one side will get my army, and the other side will get me, but I myself will never take up a weapon. I will be with the side who chooses me, I will not raise one single weapon. That was clear to everyone. So Prabhupada writes, the Kurukshetra battle was almost finished. It was not completely finished. Still, according to his vow, he should not have taken up his own weapon. He said he wouldn't do it. But the emergency was more important than the vow. He is better known as the Bhakta Vatsala, or the lover of his devotee. And thus he preferred to continue as Bhakta Vatsala than to be a worldly moralist who never breaks his solemn vow. Namo Vishnu Padaya Krishna Prestaya Bhutale Shimate Bhakti Vedanta Swami Niti Namine Namaste Saraswati Deve Gauravani Pacharine Nirvishesha Shunyavani Paskatyadi Satarine Jaya Sri Krishna Chaitana Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhara Shivasadi Gaur Bhaktavinda Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare Hare. So, please, my dear devotees, zoom yourself into the situation. Zoom yourself is not the way. Just consider the situation, please. There are the Pandavas. It's the end of this most frightening battle for Dharma. They are all unscarred. They are, of course, they have a few bruises here and there, but they are still alive, which is a miracle in itself. But now, Ashwatthama, from the opposite side, is making a last attempt, really, to finish the five Pandava brothers. He throws this very, very heavy weapon and has aimed it at all the members of the male members, including now I get the context finally right, the unborn Parikshit, who's there in the womb of Uttara. So it's an intelligent weapon. It will not destroy any buildings. It will not destroy anyone who's not a family member. It will just single out with absolute precision and with supreme radiation and heat, more than a modern atom bomb, Prabhupada says here, it will go for the Pandava members. And it came so unsuspected. It came without being announced. It came just viciously from a place where the attacker had not been seen. Ashwatthama threw it from almost like an assassinator who hides and then fires his gun at the unsuspecting victim. Krishna is becoming aware of this, and he knows the Pandavas can do nothing to counteract it. It came by surprise. So what Krishna does is he calls upon his supreme Sudarshan weapon to protect first of all to counteract the Brahmastra and then to protect all of them. Now Krishna had promised to not take up a weapon. But Prabhupada says that this promise, which is so important, to give your word and then to break it, is absolutely unacceptable. It breaks your character, it shatters your character, and so on. Krishna had given this word, and you know, he's God. He has to keep his word, otherwise how will anyone follow him, you know, if he's just some person from the street who just says something, like it is typical now in modern culture. Everyone says nice things into the face of another, but they don't mean it any longer. They don't live up to their words. It is something which really I have noted with drastic speed. This is a new culture. We are not used, we old people, to this. Saying niceties and then no one means it. They say, I brings you something, and you feel, oh, thank you. And then they don't bring it because they don't mean it. The principle is just say something nice so that the moment is nice and the person smiles at you. But they don't consider that a word must be kept, that means something. It's a sign of integrity. Modern man is really, not very ethically and character-wise correct. So, especially Krishna must keep his words, because how will anyone follow him and have trust in him if he says one thing and he does another? But Prabhupada says so nicely, for Krishna there is something even more important than keeping his word or being a worldly moralist. And that is his quality. It's called bhaktavatsalatva, his nature to be a lover of his devotees and to be a protector of his devotees. Should I read this to you again? It is very, very wonderful for us devotees to hear. Although the battle of Kurukshetra was almost finished, still, according to his vow, he should not have taken up his own weapon. But the emergency was more important than the vow. He's better known as the Bhakta Vatsala, or the lover of his devotee. And thus he preferred to continue as Bhakta Vatsala than to be a worldly moralist who never breaks his solemn vow. I think for us as devotees, this is something we should meditate about. Krishna wants to protect his devotees. And this is an important meditation, because in this world there is one problem, a very big problem. It's anxiety or fear. This world is described, as you know, as Kuntaloka, the place of anxiety. And the spiritual world, as opposed to this world, is known as Vaikuntha Loka, the place without anxiety. There's no fear. But here in this world, fear always takes root or roots itself in the human heart. We are afraid of future grief, for instance. We are afraid of not being accepted. We are afraid of not failing health, maybe. We are afraid to be humiliated by others. We are in anxiety about not being good enough. We are afraid of not making it in our spiritual life. There are many, many fears, and therefore fear, or a modern word is insecurity, lives in the heart of all human beings, including you. You're also a human, no? When we, the big insecurity for ladies is, will I get a good husband? And then will childbirth be possible for me? Nowadays we hear it is not so easy. The fears of a man is who lives outside the temple is, will I get a proper job, which is not brutal on my time, but where I can also live and supply for my needs and the needs of a family which I wish to raise. And the fear of a brahmachari is, will I be able to stay brahmachari? How will the future of this temple look like? There's always something which is in anxiety. I found out in my case, I'm will be a little bit honest with all of you. It is untypical, I know, but why not? I have noted there's always, if everything is all right in my life, then I'm afraid to have overweight in my luggage. Then when I put the luggage on the conveyor belt, the person will chastise me and say, you have overweight and we cannot accept your luggage, or I have to pay money and I'm not so rich, so I cannot pay. I'm afraid, that something goes wrong, or that my visa runs out, or there is no reason for this fear. But the material world puts this fear into your mind. Therefore, you need to, when you face your own insecurities or your own fears, it is very good to first of all ask the question, is it at all realistic, this fear? Most of the time, the fear is more in the mind than in the actual situation. Do you know this? Most of the time, fear is something which is deeply rooted in the mind and in the heart, not in the actual situation. This is exemplified by a little story. I have maybe told it already in Bhaktivedanta manner, but I would like to repeat it if I have told it. There was once a pilgrim who came to the Ganga with great hopes to purify his heart. He had made a long journey and he arrived finally in Sridharmayapur to take his sacred bath in the sacred Mother Ganga. Now, as he was taking his bath, he cupped his hands like this and offered 3 palmfuls of hands to the Ganga. This is what you're supposed to do when you take your sacred bath. You express with this, Mother Ganga, I'm poor, I have nothing really of value to offer you, but therefore I'm taking what is most valuable, your own water, and I'm giving it back to you. Please be satisfied with this simple offering and a gesture of my absolute dependence on you. So at the end of the third, you know, you scoop the water, one, do a few circles, say a few prayers, and then offer it. Second time, offer it. Third time, offer half of it, and respectfully drink what is left. So as he was drinking the water which was left, it occurred to him that there was a tadpole inside which he drank. Do you know what is a tadpole? Yes, even in a big town like London, you know. You know, Sriram? Good. And he panicked. I was a vegetarian. Now I'm going for my pilgrimage to purify myself. And what do? I become a meat eater, a yavana, a mlecha. Oh, too much. Go, why am I? The thunderbolts have fallen on my head. In hopes of becoming purified, I became more contaminated. He pulled himself out of the Ganga and he lay down on the beach. His heart started to have palpitations. He perspired profusely in anxiety. The fear of the consequences were overtaking him. And so people from the nearby came and said, "What's the matter? Can we help you?" And he said, I'm a meat eater. When they heard that he thought he had eaten or drunken a tadpole, they said, no, it's not possible. Tadpoles, you know, they are from the frogs. They're the children of the frogs. And the frogs don't go in the Ganga. It's too swift, the current. They live in pukurs, in little ponds. It cannot be that there was a tadpole. It's in the mind. It's here. But fear had taken root of his heart and the mind, and he could not get it out of the mind. He was there for 4 days, and his heart became weaker and weaker and weaker, and he was... It was clear he was dying. Then a sadhu passed by, and he saw the man, and the villagers informed him, this man is dying from a fear which is in the mind only. There is no realistic fundament to this fear. Oh, said the sadhu, what's the story? And he explained. He explained what is the story, or they explained the story to him. Then the sadhu gave to one man his little bowl, and he said, psh, 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 psh. He said something to the ear, in the ear of the villager. Oops, there was a tadpole inside. Gokishna, did you put the tadpole in there? Joking. Sadhu came, so then the sadhu said, you have swallowed a tadpole. Yes, said the man. Be intelligent. Maybe the tadpole is still alive. Just vomit. But wait a little. The sadhu waited until the man came back with his little cup. Okay, said the sadhu. 1, 2, 3. And the man went and put his finger at the back of his mouth, and then the vomiting sensation came, and he threw up. And as he threw up, the sadhu, who had by now his little cup, reached into the cup and threw a tadpole inside the liquid which came out of the man. And said, see, here is the tadpole. Your tadpole is here. Oh, good. Now you take it and you bring it to water, but don't throw it in the Ganga. It will die in the Ganga. There are no tadpoles in the Ganga. Bring it to the puku, the pond. The man got back his life, and he cupped up the tadpole. He ran to the next pond. He threw it into the pond where it came from, and he was saved. It came out of his mind. My dear devotees, most of the fears are in the mind, like in the case of this poor villager, this poor pilgrim, I wanted to say, who went to the Ganga and who thought he had drunken a tadpole. Most of your fears, most of all the fears, are in the mind. And when you want to become free of fears, whatever it is, you must work there. You must work in the mind. You must take it out from the mind. And this sadhu helped this poor man who was dying from a fear inside the mind by tricking him, actually, and bringing it thus out. There is a very beautiful shloka which I want to chant for you and then read the translation, which describes the origin of fears. Bhayam dvitiya biniveshataha syat ishata petasya viparayayo smriti tanmayayato buddha abhayettam pakyaikayesham guru devatatma. Fear arises when a living entity misidentifies himself as the material body because of absorption in the external illusory energy of the Lord. Now, this is the origin of fear. You are an eternal soul, but because of absorption into Maya, you lose your awareness of your true identity, your eternal identity, and consider yourself to be a part of this material energy through the interface, your body and mind. When the living entity thus turns away from the Supreme Lord, he also forgets his own constitutional position as a servant of the Lord. This bewildering, fearful condition is affected by the potency for illusion called Maya. Mm-hmm. So you turn away from Krishna, you do not live any longer in the understanding, I'm a part of Krishna, I'm of yours, I belong to you, I'm really all right, you know. I'm Sachit Ananda Vikra, I'm full of eternality, blissfulness, and knowledge. Where is the problem? But when you turn away from the Supreme Lord and forget your own position as a servant of the Lord, then you are all of a sudden in the changing material atmosphere, and you are identifying in your mind with what is happening in this energy, just like a person who is in the cinema may identify with a projection, you know, an actor on the screen, and may cry with the actor and laugh with the actor. Therefore, now the solution, an intelligent person should engage unflinchingly in the unalloyed devotional service of the Lord under the guidance of a bona fide spiritual master, whom he should accept as his worshipable deity and as his very life and soul. So this is the solution. When you interact with Krishna's deadly and insurmountable Maya Shakti, the material world, you will get fear, you know, like a businessman. He may invest his energy, it means his money, into a project, and then something happens with the project which makes his investment very insecure. And at that moment, because he's totally invested, fear overcomes him. We are all like these businessmen. And in fact, in the fifth canto, there is this analogy that we are like merchants who have gone to the field of material enjoyment, the material energy, and we want to get something out of it. No? And we are totally away from Krishna in our mind. We are not serving Krishna any longer. We are serving our own interest. And at that time, we also get shaken up, like that businessman who is now fearful and who cannot sleep and needs 5 melatonin pills to sleep. No? Yes. At that time, when we become so identified with the material energy, our memory gets lost and our intelligence is lost. And then our life gets destroyed. Krishna explains this in the Gita. That when you identify with this material energy, lust develops, and then memory is eventually destroyed, and intelligence is destroyed, and your whole life gets destroyed. Therefore, he gives the solution. One who restrains his senses, he says, keeping them under full control and fixes his consciousness upon me, is known as a man of steady intelligence. Huh? That is the solution, my dear devotees. You control your senses, you put your and you surrender to Krishna. And at that time, you will be free from all fears. You will take back your investment from the material energy, your energy, your identification with it, and you will act on the transcendental platform. This is the advantage, for instance, of living in the in the temple. I know two young men who are in the temple, and I ask them how is it, and because they're from England, they all say with a tired smile, "Nice, Maharaj, so nice, very nice." And I already know, yes, the English, the modern style, polite and beautiful words, but what is in the heart, that is something else. But I think in these two cases, let's have the benefit of a doubt to these young men. My dear devotees, it's very good to undergo a training in the temple, to learn the brahmachari ethics, to learn a disciplined life of sense control, where the only exception is the Mahasweets. But you should be a little careful with that as well. And where you live a life under the order of a spiritual master, you go out for various services related with the mission. You go under a strict training of the morning program, where you participate without fail. Such discipline is required for everyone of us. Also, when you are congregational members, when you are householders, it's good to sometimes go under this training, because it helps you to bring your mind back from the material energy and become free from all fear, because you rest, you bring your mind back from Maya, and you rest it at the beautiful toenails of Sri Krishna. Krishna's lotus feet are very beautiful. There are he has his delicate soft toes, and on them these nails which spread a light like beautiful moonbeams. When Deepak and myself came this morning to the temple on our sacred pilgrimage, we looked at the moon, and we were for a moment impressed by the soothing moonlight. So when a devotee meditates about Krishna and thinks about his lotus feet, he should think about the light, the moon-like shimmer of Krishna's beautiful lotus feet, and become free from all the remnants of inner darkness, of which fear is the greatest. The moment you surrender to Krishna, then you will the fears will not be longer with you. Even the fear of death will not be there. Srila Prabhupada has given the analogy that death is the origin of all fears. It's the ultimate fearful situation, and it feeds, because death is, it feeds into all the other fears. You must know you have one thing in you as a conditioned soul. That is the fear of death. It's subconscious. It's residing in your, at the bottom of your personality. It's the cause of all the insecurities which you have, all the fears. And even that fear goes away when you are close to Krishna in your mind, when you have surrendered to Krishna, when you are thus Krishna conscious. Prabhupada gives the example of the cat. For the rat, the cat is the most fearful personality. I mean, the cat is it jumps at the rat, it bites mostly here at the, where the head joins the rest of the body, and he cracks that bone, you know, that, whatever it is, that line of bones, and this way kills the rat. For its kitten, the cat captures it at the exact, at almost the same spot, not at the bones, only at the fur, and carries the kitten away from danger. When the kitten is getting in trouble and is coming too close to the dog, the mother cat will jump from behind the bush, grab the kitten, and run away with the kitten and bring it to safety. So For the materialist, death is like the cat is for the rat. Bang, the end. For a devotee, death is not fearful any longer. Death carries the devotee to the next situation. We always cry when a devotee leaves. Do we cry for us or do we cry for the devotee? Ah, important question. Many times we cry for us or we miss him. But the devotee, is going back to home, back to God. It's a very auspicious journey he makes. It's good for him. So for a devotee, even the cause of all the fears, the fearful power which funnels into all other fears is overcome. This is how wonderful the situation is to take shelter at Krishna. And this is how much it works. I have personally seen devotees on the deathbed all of a sudden smiling and calling Krishna, Krishna, and leaving the body with a very, very happy expression in the face. Not at all a frightened or fearful expression, but a very peaceful and nice expression. Because they could surrender to Krishna. They could be with Krishna. Therefore, when someone dies, we should be there with our karatas and help them to remember Krishna by doing a nice Krishna kirtan next to to them. I would like to end this class by telling you how much Krishna is dedicated to take the fear from his devotees. Just like here, in this verse we had heard about him being Bhakta Vatsala and removing threat of the Brahmastra or nuclear weapon from the Pandavas. Krishna always is dedicated to take care of his devoted devotees. There was once, Bengal and Orissa were in troubled times when Chaitanya Mahaprabhu appeared. Foreign invaders with their armies had occupied the country and were controlling the traffic. So Mahaprabhu, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, went with his devotees on pilgrimage to Jagannath Puri, but they came to an area where a warlord was there with his soldiers, and they had fires in the night night guards to see that no people would cross in their areas. In order to frighten pilgrims away, they had impaled them. Do you know what that is? Put them on a sharpened lance through the bottom hole. They came. It takes 3 days before you pass out, and it's the most fearful death. So they had tortured pilgrims like this. They were there, and now Mahaprabhu wanted to go through this area to Jagannath Puri. So they found a boatman who took them so that they could pass by the river, and they could see the torches in the background giving light and fire. So Mahaprabhu was passing. All of a sudden, he felt inclined to chant. It was in the night, I should say. All of a sudden, he felt inclined to chant the holy name. And he rose in the boat and went, Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, and so on. No? All the sleeping members of this class are awakening when they hear the Hare Krishna mantra. How nice you respond. So he was on the boat chanting like this, loudly. Mahaprabhu would chant, and you wouldn't have to tell him to chant loud. He was very loud, sometimes so loud that it was an ear-splitting sound. This is how it is described. And the boatman said, "Calm down, saintly person. We are going through this guarded territory, and the soldiers are there, and they will catch us. And also the devotees were becoming fearful. Mahaprabhu, later we can chant, not now." But Mahaprabhu continued to chant, and then he made a point. He said, "Do not be afraid. Those who take shelter of Krishna through chanting his holy names are protected by this personal weapon of the Lord, the Sudarshan Chakra." He said this. He made this point. And my dear devotees, I have seen this in my own life. I was once in a Sangha. In the old times we would do Sankirtan by first chanting through the streets and purifying the atmosphere of the street with Madanga cartels and loud chanting. And then we would go back and we would distribute books to the in the purified street, to the purified heart. We were very faithful. So I remember we had this kirtan. We went down the street in Göttingen, German town. And we were coming to this area where there were the bars. And there was this, all of a sudden, this man came out of the, I don't know if he came from a bar, but he came from somewhere. He ripped away his shirt. He took a knife and cut his hand. I don't know if you know what this means in fighting language. I will draw blood now, and it will be a fight to death. What fighters do when they go for the ultimate kill. Either they are killed or the others are killed. They're horrifying. And we were just simple, Krishna, Krishna, chanting. And this man was going in position, was roaring, was getting his adrenaline boiling so that he could, and it was hefty, a chest like 20 elephants as wide. It was highly impressive. Then he attacked. Now, as he came to the Sankh, I was in the second row. I knew the first row would go down first, and then it was my turn. It happened so fast, I knew how to do something, but at that time, now it's lost this memory, but it came so surprising, I could not design a plan what to do with this. At that moment, my dear devotees, from a bar came a black-dressed man, zooming like a tiger impressive man in front of us, and challenged him and then began to beat him so mercilessly. He was a Mr. Superfighter, so mercilessly he beat the poor guy that we had to intervene and said, "It's enough, he is already broken in 20 places. No need, Then this man said, "There was need." And then he turned around to the bar and came back with a platter full of mineral waters and distributed it. "You are monks, you are a little fearful of this scene. You should not see such scenes. Drink water and continue to chant." So I, from where did this man come? I don't know. Who empowered him? That I know, the Lord. The Lord protects those who chant his holy name and take full shelter in him. I saw that in Göttingen and in many other situations like when we were in war areas preaching and so on. The Lord is definitely there to protect his devotees. So when you feel fear, which you will fear, which you will have, although there may not be any realistic reason. When you are a devotee, where is the reason for fear? You must turn to Krishna in all sincerity, and you must not avoid to surrender to Krishna. You will feel fear when you interact with Krishna's deadly and insurmountable Maya energy, when you turn your back away from Krishna. But the way to overcome all fears is turn to Krishna. This I request you very sincerely. So if you forget the many points which were in the lecture, this is the motto, this is the core point. See that you make a plan to turn to Krishna. As we saw last time, you can do many things in your Krishna consciousness, but avoid this one point to turn consciously to Krishna. You can have your Cheshta Rupa Bhakti totally in place, where you do efforts on a daily basis and everything looks really good, but your mind is not surrendered with Krishna. Your heart is not with Krishna. At that time, your bhakti is not alive. You must learn to turn with your heart to Krishna. And then fears go. Because fears are not mostly, the situation in the world is not fearful. It's something which comes in the mind. It's something which is occupying and infesting the mind. I thank you very much. Hare Krishna. I have come to the end. I hope my English was understandable. I'm trying my best. And soon it will be acceptable, I think. Hare Krishna. I think we have time for one question. One good question means a relevant question.